I don't think I can go through with this, Angua hissed, as she headed along Treacle Street again. What's wrong? Said Carrot. Angua jerked a thumb over her shoulder. Her! Vampires and werewolves, not good company. But she's a black ribboner, Carrot protested mildly. She doesn't have to do anything. She just is. For one of us, being around a vampire is like the worst bad hair day you can imagine. And believe me, a werewolf knows what a real bad hair day is. Is it the smell? Well, that's not good, but it's more than that. They're so poised, so perfect. I get near her and I feel hairy. I can't help it. It goes back thousands of years. It's the image. Vampires are always so cool, so in control. But werewolves are, well, shambling animals, underdogs. But that's not true. A lot of black ribboners are totally neurotic, and you're so sleek and not when I'm around vampires. They trigger off something. Look, stop trying to be logical about it, will you? I hate it when you get logical on me. Why didn't Mr. Vimes hold out? All right, I'm on top of it. But it's hard, that's all. I'm sure it's not easy for her either, Carrot began. Angua gave him a look. But that's him, she thought. He really does think like that. It's just that he doesn't know when saying something like that is a really bad idea. Not easy for her. When was it ever easy for me? At least she probably doesn't have to stash changes of clothes around the city. Okay, going cold bat can't be nice, but we get cold bats every month. And when do I ever rip out a throat? I hunt chickens. And I pay for them in advance. Does she suffer from PLT? I don't think so. Oh, gods, and it's already well past waxing gibbous tonight. I can feel my hair growing. Bloody vampires. They make such a big thing about not being murderous bloodsuckers any more. They get all the sympathy, even his. All this flashed past in a second. She said, "Let's just get down there and get it done and get out, shall we?" There was still a crowd hanging around near the entrance. Amongst them was Otto Shriek, who gave Carrot a little shrug. There were still guards on duty too, but it was clear that someone had been talking to them. They nodded to the squad when they arrived. One of them even opened the door very politely. Carrot beckoned the other watchman closer. "Everything we say will be overheard, understand?" he said. "Everything. So be careful. And remember, as far as they are concerned, you can't see in the dark." He led the way inside to where Helmklever stood, beaming and edgy. "Welcome, headbanger," said the dwarf. "If we are using more Porkian, I would prefer Captain Carrot," said Carrot. "As you wish, smelter," said the dwarf. "The elevator awaits." As they descended, Carrot said, "What powers this, please?" "A device," said Helmklever, pride breaking out over his nervousness. "Really? You have many devices," said Carrot. "An axle and an average bar." "An average bar? I've only ever heard of them." "We are fortunate. I'll be happy to show it to you. It's invaluable for food preparation," Helmklever gabbled. "And down below we have a number of cubes of varying powers. Nothing may be withheld from the smelter. I'm ordered to show you everything you wish to see, and tell you everything you wish to know." "Thank you," said Carrot, as the elevator stopped in blackness, speckled with the corpse glow of worms. "How large are your diggings here?" "I cannot tell you that," said Helmklever quickly. "I do not know. Ah, here is Ardent. I will go back up." "No, Helmklever, remain with us, please," said a darker shadow in the gloom. "You should see this, too. Good day to you, Captain Carrot, and," Ardent managed something like a smile, "ladies, please follow me. I am sorry for the lack of light. Perhaps your eyes will adapt. I'll be happy to describe to you any object that you touch. Now, I will lead you to the place where the dreadful occurrence occurred." Angua looked round as they were led along the tunnel, noting that Carrot had to walk with his knees slightly bent. "Headbanger, eh? Funny you never mentioned that to the lads." Every dozen yards or so, Ardent stopped in front of a round door, invariably with the verms clustered around it, and turned a wheel. The doors creaked when they opened, and they opened with a ponderousness that suggested that they were heavy. Here and there in the tunnels were things, mechanical things, hanging from the wall and clearly there with a purpose. Verms glowed around them. She hadn't got a clue what the objects were for, but Carrot greeted them with the enthusiastic glee like a schoolboy. "You have air bells and water boots, Mr. Ardent. I've only ever heard of them." "You were raised in the good rock of Copperhead, were you not, Captain? Mining in this wet plain is like digging tunnels in the sea." "And the iron doors are quite watertight, are they?" "Yes, indeed. Airtight, too." "Remarkable. I should like to visit again, when this wretched business is over. A dwarf mine under the city, it's quite hard to believe. I'm sure that could be arranged, Captain. And that was Carrot at work. He could sound so innocent, so friendly, so stupid, in a puppy-dog kind of way, and then he suddenly became this big block of steel and you walked right into it. By the smell of it, Sally was watching him with interest. "Be sensible," Angua told herself. "Don't let the vampire get to you. Don't start believing you're stupid and hairy. Think clearly. You do have a brain." Surely people could go mad living in this murk. Angua found it easier to close her eyes. Down here, her nose worked better without distraction. Darkness helped. With her eyes shut, various faint colours danced across her brain. Without the stink of the damned vampire, though, she would have been able to pick up a lot more. The stench poisoned every sensation. "Hold on, don't think like that. You're just letting your mind do the thinking for you." "Hang on, that's wrong." There was a faint outline in the corner of the next chamber, which was quite large. It looked like an outline. A chalk outline. A glowing chalk outline.
"I understand this is the approved method," said Ardent. "You'll be aware of night chalk, Captain. It is made of crushed verm. The glow persists for about a day. On the floor here you will see, or rather, you will feel the club that dealt him his death blow, just under your hand, Captain. There is blood on it. I regret the darkness, but we kept the verms out. They would have feasted, you understand."
Angua saw Carrot, outlined in his permanent smell of soap, feel his way across the space. His hand touched another metal door.
"Where does this go, sir?" he said, tapping it.
"To the outer chambers."
"Was it open at the time the troll attacked the Grag?"
"You really assume a troll did it?" Angua wondered.
"I believe so," said Ardent.
"Then I would like it open now, please."
"I cannot agree to that request, Captain."
"I did not intend it to be a request, sir. After it has been opened, I will need to know who was in the mine at the time the troll broke in. I will need to speak to them, and to whoever discovered the body. Harag, Jakagra."
For Angua, the smell of Ardent changed. Under all those layers, the dwarf was suddenly uncertain. He'd walked right into it. He hesitated for several seconds before replying.
"I will endeavour to meet your requirements, Smelter," he said. "I will leave you now. Come, Helmcliver."
"Gzdavaj," said Carrot. "Kazagraj, Djkharagna, Raddij."
Ardent stepped forward, uncertainty growing, and held out both hands palm down. For a moment, until his sleeves slipped, Angua saw a faintly glowing symbol on his right wrist. Every deep downer had a drut as unique evidence of identity in a world of shrouded figures. She'd heard they were made by tattooing verm blood under the skin. It sounded painful. Carrot took his hands for a moment and then let go.
"Thank you,"
he said, as if the dwarfish interlude had not taken place. The two dwarfs hurried away. In the thick darkness, the watchmen were left alone.
"What was all that about?" said Angua.
"Just reassuring him," said Carrot cheerfully.
He reached into a pocket.
"Now we've arrived, let's have some light in here, shall we?"
Angua smelled his hand move vigorously across the wall once or twice, as if he was painting. There arose an aroma of pork pie.
"Soon be brighter," he said.
"Captain Carrot, this wasn't where—" Sally began.
"All in good time, Lance Constable," said Carrot firmly. "For now, we just observe."
"But I must tell you, later on, Lance Constable," said Carrot a little louder.
Verms were flowing around the open door they'd arrived by, and across the stone.
"By the way, Sally, will you be all right if we view the body?"
"That's right," Angua thought. "Think of her. I've dealt with blood every day. Walk a mile in my nostrils."
"Old blood will not be a problem, sir," said Sally. "There's some in here, but there's—"
"I expect they've set up a morgue," said Carrot quickly. "The death rites are quite complex."
"Morgue? A home away from home for you, my dear," snarled Angua's inner wolf. The verms were spreading out now, crawling across the wall with a purpose. She crouched down to bring her nose nearer to the floor. "I can smell dwarfs, lots of dwarfs," Angua thought. "Hard to smell trolls, especially underground. Blood on the club like a flower. Dwarf smell on the club, but there's dwarf smell everywhere. I can smell... hang on, that's familiar." The floor mostly smelled of slime and loam. Carrot's footprints showed up, and so did hers. There was a lot of dwarf smell, and she could still just make out the smell of their concern. This is where they found the body, then. But this patch of mud here,
That was different. It had been trodden into the floor, but it smelled just like the heavy clay from up around Quarry Lane. Who lived in Quarry Lane? Most of the trolls in Ankh Morpork. A clue. She smiled in the dwindling darkness. And the trouble with clues, as Mr. Vimes always said, was that they were so easy to make. You could walk around with a pocket full of the bloody things. The darkness was disappearing because the light was growing. Angua looked up. There was a huge, bright symbol on the wall where Carrot had touched it. He dragged some meat across it, she thought. They've turned up for the feast. Ardent came back in, with Helmclever trailing after him. He got as far as, "The door here can be opened again, but alas, we—" and stopped. They were happy worms. By the standards of greeny-white glow, they were brilliant. Behind Carrot, there was now a gently glowing circle, with two diagonal lines slashed through it. Both the dwarfs stared at it as if in shock. "Well, let's take a look, shall we?" said Carrot, apparently oblivious to all this. "We, alas, the water not entirely watertight. The other doors, the troll caused flooding," Ardent murmured, not taking his eyes off the glow. "But you say we can go through here, at least," said Carrot politely, pointing to the sealed door. Yes, certainly." The steward hurried forward and produced a key. The wheel, unlocked, turned easily. Angua was acutely aware of how the muscles on Carrot's bare arms glistened and pumped as he pulled the metal door open. Oh no, not yet, surely. She ought to have at least another day. It was the vampire, that's what it was, standing there looking so innocent. Bits of her body wanted her to become a wolf right now to defend herself. There was a pillared room on the other side of the door. It smelled damp and unfinished. There were worms on the ceiling, but the floor was muddy and squelched underfoot. Angua could make out another dwarf door across the room, and one on either side as well. "We take spoil to a heap on the waste ground outside," said Ardent. We believe the troll got in that way. It was an unpardonable oversight." He still sounded uneasy. "And a troll was not seen," said Carrot, kicking at the mud. "No, these chambers are finished. The diggers are elsewhere, but they came as soon as they could. We believe the grag had come up here for solitude, to die at the random hand of an abomination." "Lucky for the troll, wasn't it, sir?" said Angua sharply. "He just happened to wander in and stumble across Hamcrusher." Carrot's boot struck something metallic. He kicked some more mud away. "You've laid rails," he said. "You must be shifting a lot of spoil, sir." "Better to push than to carry," said Ardent. "Now, I have arranged for—" "Hold on, what's this?" said Carrot. He squatted down and pulled at something pale. "It's a piece of bone by the look of it, on a string." "There are plenty of old bones," said Ardent. "Now I—" It came free with a gloop and grinned at them in the sickly light. "It doesn't look very old, sir," said Carrot. Just one breath was enough for Angua. "It's a sheep skull," she said, "about 3 months dead." "Oh, another clue," she added to herself. "Nice and convenient for us to find, too." "Could have been dropped by the troll," said Carrot. "The troll," said Ardent, backing away. It wasn't the reaction Angua had expected. Ardent had been nervous already, but now, under all those wrappings, he was on the verge of panic. "You did say a troll had attacked the grag, sir," said Carrot. "But I never saw that before. Why didn't we find it? Did it come back?" "All the doors are sealed, sir," said Carrot patiently. "Aren't they?" "But have we sealed it in here with us?" It was practically a shriek. "You'd know, sir, wouldn't you?" said Carrot. "Trolls sort of, well, stand out." "I must fetch the guards," said Ardent, backing away towards the single open door. "It could be anywhere." "Then you could be heading right towards it, sir," said Angua. Ardent stopped dead for a moment, and then uttered a little whimper and ran into the dark, Helmclever on his heels. "Well, how do we all think that went?" said Angua, with a horrible smile. "And what was that you said to him in dwarfish? You know I am a dwarf in the Brotherhood of All Dwarfs?"
With emphatic certainty you know me. I observe the rights of the dwarf. What, who am I? I am the Brothers United," said Sally carefully. "Well done, Lance Constable," said Carrot. "That was an excellent translation."
"Yes. Did you bite someone clever?" said Angua.
"I am a black ribboner, Sergeant," said Sally meekly, "and I'm naturally good at languages. While we're alone, Captain, can I mention something else?"
"Certainly," said Carrot, trying the wheel on one of the closed doors.
"I think a lot of things are wrong here, sir. There was something very strange about the way Ardent reacted to that skull. Why would he think the troll was still here after all that time?"
"'A troll getting into a dwarf mine can do a lot of damage before it's stopped,' said Carrot.
"'Ardent really wasn't expecting that skull, sir,' said Sally, pressing on. "'I heard his heart racing. It terrified him.
Something more, sir. There's lots of city dwarfs here. Hundreds. I can feel their hearts, too. There are 6 grags. Their hearts beat very slowly. And there are other dwarfs, too. Strange ones, and only a few of them. Maybe 10.
That's useful to know, Lance Constable. Thank you very much.
Yes, I don't know how we managed before you came, said Angua. She walked quickly over to the other side of the dank room so that they wouldn't see her face. She needed fresh air, not the pervasive, clinging, old root-cellar reek of this place. Her head was full of shouting. The Temperance League? Not one drop? Did anyone believe that for 1 minute? But everyone wanted to fall for it because vampires could be so charming. Of course they were. It was part of being a vampire. It was the only way to get people to stay the night in the dreadful castle. Everyone knew a leopard couldn't change his shorts. But no, stick on a stupid black ribbon and learn the words for lips that touch ichor shall never touch mine, and they fall for it every time. But werewolves? Well, they were just sad monsters, weren't they? Never mind that life was a daily struggle with the inner wolf. Never mind that you had to force yourself to walk past every lamppost. Never mind that in every petty argument you had to fight back the urge to settle it all with just one bite. Never mind that, because everyone knew that a creature that was a wolf and a human combined was a kind of dog. They were expected to behave. Part of her was shouting that this wasn't so, that this was just PLT and the known effects of a vampire's presence. But somehow, now, with the smells around her becoming so strong that they were approaching solidity, she did not want to listen. She wanted to smell the world. She was practically climbing into her own nose. After all, that was why she was in the watch, wasn't it, for her nose? New smell, new smell. Sharp blue-grey of lichen, the browns and purples of old carrion, undertones of wood and leather. Even as a full wolf, she'd never tasted the air so forensically as this. Something else, sharp, chemical. The air was full of the smell of damp and dwarfs, but these little traces ran through it like a piccolo hornpipe through a requiem, and formed one thing. Troll, she croaked. Troll! Troll with skull belt and headlocks. On slab or something like it. Troll! Angua was almost barking at the door now. "'Open door, this way!' She barely needed her eyes now, but there, on the metal of the door, in charcoal, someone had drawn a circle with 2 diagonal lines through it. Suddenly Carrot was by her side. At least he had the decency not to say, "'Are you sure?' but he rattled the big wheel. The door was locked. "'I don't think there's water behind this,' he said. "'Oh, really?' Angua managed. "'You know that was just to keep us out?' Carrot turned, and there, running towards them, was a squad of dwarfs. They were heading for the door, as though quite oblivious to the presence of the watchman. "'Don't let them go through first,' said Angua through gritted teeth. "'Trail is faint!' Carrot drew his sword with one hand and held up his badge with the other. "'City watch!' he roared. "'Lower your weapons, please! Thank you!' The squad slowed, which meant that, in the nature of these things, those at the back piled into the hesitant ones in front. "'This is a crime scene,' Carrot announced. "'I am still the smelter. Mr. Ardent, are you there?' "'Do you have guards on the other side of this door?' Ardent pushed through the throng of dwarfs.
"'No, I believe not,' he said. "'Is the troll still behind it?'
Carrot glanced at Sally, who shrugged. Vampires had never developed the ability to listen for troll hearts. There was no point.
"'Possibly, but I don't think so,' said Carrot. "'Please unlock it. We might yet find a trail.'
"'Captain Carrot, you know that the safety of the mine must always come first,' said Ardent. "'Of course you must give chase, but first we will open the door and make certain there is no danger behind it. You must concede us that.'
"'Let them,' hissed Angua. "'It'll be a clear ascent. I'll be okay.' Carrot nodded and whispered back, "'Well done.' Under her flesh she felt her tail want to wag. She wanted to lick his face. That was the dog part of her doing the thinking. "'You're a good dog. It was important to be a good dog.' Carrot pulled her aside as a couple of dwarfs approached the door purposefully. "'But it's long gone,' she murmured, as 2 more dwarfs came up behind the first 2. "'The scent's 12 hours old at least.'
"'What are they doing?' said Carrot, half to himself.
The 2 new dwarfs were covered from head to toe in leather, like Ardent, but wore mail over the top of it. Their helmets were quite unadorned, but covered the whole face and head, with only a slit for the eyes. Each dwarf carried a large black pack on his back and held a lance in front of him.
"'Oh, no,' said Carrot.
"'Surely not here.'
At a word of command, the door was swung open, revealing only darkness beyond. The lances spat flame, long yellow tongues of it, and the black dwarfs walked slowly along behind them. Smoke, heavy and greasy, filled the air. Angua fainted. Darkness. Sam Vimes struggled up the hill, tired to the bone. It was warm, warmer than he'd expected. Sweat stung his eyes. Water splashed under his feet and made his boots slip. And ahead, up the slope, a child was screaming. He knew he was shouting. He could hear the breath wheezing in his throat. He could feel his lips moving, but he couldn't hear the words he was reciting over and over again. The darkness felt like cold ink. Tendrils of it dragged at his mind and his body, slowing him down, pulling him back. And now they came at him with flames. Vimes blinked and found himself staring at the fireplace. The flames licked peacefully. There was the swish of a dress as Sybil came back into the room, sat down and picked up her darning. He watched her dully. She was darning his socks. They had maids in his place, and she darned his socks. It wasn't as if they didn't have so much money that he could have a new pair of socks every day. But she'd picked up the idea that it was a wifely duty, and so she did it. It was comforting in a strange sort of way. It was only a shame that she wasn't in fact any good at mending holes, so Sam ended up with sock heels that were a huge welt of criss-crossing wool. He wore them anyway and never mentioned it. "A weapon that fires flame," he said slowly. "Yes, sir," said Carrot. "Dwarfs have a weapon that fires flame. The Deep Downers use them to explode pockets of mine gas," said Carrot. "I never expected to see them here." "It's a weapon if some bastard points it at me," said Vimes. "How much gas do they expect to find in Ankh Morpork?" "Sir, even the river catches fire in hot summer." "Okay, okay, I'll grant you that," Vimes conceded unwillingly. "Make sure the word gets out, will you? Anyone seen above ground with one of those things, we'll shoot first and there will be no point in asking questions afterwards." "Good grief, that's all we need. Have you got anything more to tell me, Captain?" "Well, afterwards we did get to see Hamcrusher's body," said Carrot. "What can I say? On his wrist was the draught that identifies him, and his skin was pale. There was a terrible wound on the back of the head. They say it's Hamcrusher. I can't prove it. What I can say is that he didn't die where they said he did, or when they said he did." "Why?" said Vimes. "Blood, sir," said Sally. "There should have been blood everywhere. I looked at the wound. What that club hit over the head was already a corpse, and he wasn't killed in that tunnel." Vimes took several slow breaths. There was so much bad stuff here, you needed to take it one horror at a time. "I'm worried, Captain," he said. "Do you know why? It's because I've got a feeling that very soon I'm going to be asked to confirm that there's evidence that a troll did the deed, which, my friend, will be like announcing the outbreak of war." "You did ask us to investigate, sir," said Carrot. "Yes, but I didn't expect you to come back with a wrong result. The whole thing stinks. That clay from Quarry Lane was planted, wasn't it?" "It must have been. Trolls don't clean their feet much, but walking mud all the way, not a chance." "And they don't leave their clubs behind either," growled Vimes. "So it's a set-up, right? But it turns out there really was a troll. Was Angua sure?" "Positive, sir," said Carrot. "We've always trusted her nose before. Sorry, sir, she had to go and get some fresh air. She was straining her senses as it was, and she got a lungful of that smoke." "I can imagine," said Vimes. Hell's bells, he thought. We were right on the point where I could tell Vetinari that it looked like some kind of half-baked inside job, faked to look as though a troll did it, and we find out there was a troll. Tch! So much for relying on the evidence." Sally coughed politely. "Ardent was shocked and frightened when the captain found the skull, sir," she said. "It wasn't an act. I'm certain of it. He was near collapse with terror. So was Helmclever the whole time." "Thank you for that, Lance Constable," said Vimes gravely. "I suspect I shall feel the same way when I go out there with a megaphone and shout, 'Hello, boys, welcome to the replay of Coombe Valley. Hey, let's hold it right here in the city.'" "I don't think you should actually put it like that, sir," said Carrot. "Well, yes, I'll probably try to be a bit more subtle since you mention it," said Vimes. "And it'd be at least the 16th battle referred to as Coombe Valley," Carrot went on, "or 17th if you include the one in Villainous Pass, which was more of a fracas. Only three of them were in the original Coombe Valley, the one immortalized in Rascal's painting. It's said to be quite accurate. Of course, it took him years." "It's an amazing work," said Sybil, not looking up from her darning. "It used to belong to my family before we gave it to the museum, you know." "Isn't progress a wonderful thing, Captain?" said Vimes, pouring as much sarcasm into his tone as possible, since Carrot was so bad at recognizing it.
When we have our Coombe Valley, our friend Otto will be able to take a colour iconograph of it in a fraction of a second. Wonderful. It's been a long time since this city was last burned to the ground. He ought to be springing into action. Once upon a time he would have done, but now perhaps he should take these precious moments to work out what he should do before he sprang. Vimes tried to think. Don't think of it all as one big bucket of snakes. Think of it as one snake at a time. Try to sort it out. Now, what needs to be done first? Everything. All right, try a different approach. What are these mine signs all about? He said. That Helmclever sort of drew one at me. I saw one on the wall, too, and you drew one. The following dark, said Carrot. Yes, it was scrawled all over the place. What does it mean? Dread, sir, said Carrot earnestly. A warning of terrible things to come. Well, if one of those little sods so much as surfaces with one of those flame weapons in his hand, that will be true. But you mean they scrawl it on walls? Carrot nodded. You have to understand about a dwarf mine, sir. It's a kind of emotional hothouse, was how Vimes understood it, although no dwarf would ever describe it that way. Humans would have gone insane living like that, cramped together, no real privacy, no real silence, seeing the same faces every day for years on end. And since there are a lot of pointy weapons around, it would only be a matter of time before the ceilings dripped blood. Dwarfs didn't go mad. They stayed thoughtful and sombre and keen on their job. But they scrawled mine sign. It was like an unofficial ballot, voting by graffiti, showing your views on what was going on. In the confines of a mine, any problem was everyone's problem. Stress leapt from dwarf to dwarf like lightning. The signs earthed it. They were an outlet, a release, a way of showing what you felt without challenging anyone, because of all the pointy weapons. The following dark. We await what follows with dread. Another translation might mean, in effect, repent, ye sinners. There are hundreds of runes for darkness, said Carrot. Some of them are part of ordinary dwarfish, of course, like the long dark. There's plenty like that, but some are mystical, Vimes suggested. Unbelievably mystical, sir. There's books and books about them. And the way the dwarfs think about books and words and runes, well, you wouldn't believe it, sir. They think the world was written, sir. All words have enormous power. Destroying a book is worse than murder to a deep downer. I've rather gathered that, said Blackboard Monitor Vimes. Some deep downers believe that the dark signs are real, Carrot went on. Well, if you can see the writing on the wall, Vimes began. Real, like alive, sir, said Carrot. Like they exist somewhere down in the dark under the world, and they cause themselves to be written. There's the waiting dark. That's the dark that fills a new hole. The closing dark. I don't know about that one, but there's an opening dark, too. The breathing dark, that's rare. The calling dark, very dangerous. The speaking dark, the catching dark. The secret dark, I've seen that. They're all fine. But the following dark is a very bad sign. I used to hear the older dwarfs talking about that. They said it could make lamps go out, and much worse things. When people start drawing that sign, things have got very bad. This is all very interesting, but everyone in the mine is nervous as heck, sir, stressed like wires. Angua said she could smell it, but so could I, sir. I grew up in a mine. When something is wrong, everyone catches it. On days like that, sir, my father used to stop all mining operations. You get too many accidents. Frankly, sir, the dwarfs are mad with worry. The following dark signs are everywhere. It's probably the miners they've hired since they came here. They feel that something is very wrong, but the only thing they can do about it is sign. Well, their top grag has been killed. I can feel the atmosphere in a mine, sir. Any dwarf can. And that one is rancid with fear and dread and horrible confusion. And there's worse things in the deeps than the following dark. Vimes had a momentary vision of vengeful darkness rising through caves like a tide, faster than a man could run. Which was stupid. You couldn't see dark. Hold on, though. Sometimes you could. Back in the old days, when he was on nights all the time and no one was rich enough for lanterns, he'd known all the shades of darkness. And sometimes you got darkness so thick that you almost felt you had to push your way through it. Those were the nights when horses were skittish and dogs whined, and down in the slaughterhouse district the animals broke out of their pens. They were inexplicable, just like those nights that were quite light and silvery, even though there was no moon in the sky. He'd learned, then, not to use his little watchman's lantern. Light only ruined your vision, it blinded you. You stared into the dark until it blinked. You stared it down.